This episode of the Pain Education Corner is sponsored by the Camella Foundation. The Camella Foundation is committed to relieving pain naturally using osteopathic healing principles. Here at the Camella Foundation, we envision a world where people achieve their maximum potential by being empowered with knowledge and skills to heal themselves and others. This information is to be used for educational purposes only, and not to be construed as medical advice. If you have any questions or concerns, please consult a licensed healthcare professional. Hello, and welcome to the Pain Education Podcast, brought to you by the Camella Foundation. My name is Bill Paravano, the Knee Pain Guru, and today we have a special guest, Nathan Oxenfeld, and we're going to pick his brain today on how eye tension relates to physical pain. And I think it's really important to understand that our physical body takes in information through our eyes that causes us to be tense or not tense. So, without further ado, I would like to welcome Nathan to the podcast today. And I'd also like, Nathan, I'd like you to share a little bit about yourself.
My pleasure. Thank you, Bill. It's really awesome to be here. I'm excited to have this opportunity to speak with you and cover some of these really fascinating topics that sometimes not many people know about, this whole vision connection. So, yeah, my name is Nathan Oxenfeld. I came from a place of having vision problems myself. So I got prescribed glasses at a pretty young age, around like 7 or 8 years old. Couldn't really see the blackboard clearly in class. So I got my glasses for the distance. So I had myopia at first, or nearsightedness. Then I switched over to contacts pretty shortly after that, because it was just kind of easier to have those on my eyes instead of dealing with the glasses. That led to a development of astigmatism in an eye. And then I just got really dependent on the lenses, kind of like the normal story of just, you know, sort of a slippery slope. Once you start using them, you can't really do as much without them. And that progressed throughout middle school, high school, college. And I was even sort of on the fence about getting laser eye surgery. I was thinking about how can I maybe get out of these glasses in one way or another. But I was a little hesitant about that. And luckily, I was introduced to this method called the Bates method, named after an eye doctor named Dr. William Bates. And it's really this kind of more holistic approach to eye care compared to what we're used to, going to the eye doctor, getting our glasses, or, you know, cataracts surgically removed, or these, you know, more conventional approaches, which turns out are really kind of more treating the symptoms of vision problems, as opposed to this holistic approach is like treating the underlying root causes. And I never thought about that. I never thought about what my root causes were of my myopia and astigmatism as a little kid. So in my 20s, I had a chance to go back and look at my vision in this new way and implement some of these lifestyle changes and vision practices and techniques and habits. And it really transformed my vision for the better. So I started going without my glasses more and decreasing my prescriptions over time, and eventually worked my way back out of glasses altogether and seeing clearly with just the naked eye. With the help of a vision teacher, I'd started by myself, and it was kind of slow going for the first couple of years, just trying to read books and research online. But once I got some help from a professional and took some online lessons with her, it really sped things up and really gave me that final push to go completely all the way. And then I was like, this works for me. And I realized very few people around me had ever heard of anything like this before. And so I felt this really strong urge to start to really devote myself to not just doing this stuff for myself, but to actually share it with other people. And so I trained to become a Bates Method teacher and started my practice, Integral Eyesight Improvement, here in Asheville in 2013. So yeah, coming on 8 years of of helping other people through this process of gaining some more independence from their glasses and also getting other benefits beyond just the eyesight improvement. And that's why I'm excited about our talk today, because a lot of the people that I've worked with have also noticed change happening be elsewhere around their, other than just their eyes, decreases in pain or less headaches or migraines. And there's so much connection there. So I'm really curious to see where we go today and how, and what we explore.
Yeah, there's so many questions I want to go down as far as like just the eye conversation without tying it into the pain. However, I'm going to discipline myself today. And we're going to go down that connection with how the eyes can relate to physical tension in other parts of the body. That is, in terms of that conversation, I would point anyone to go talk to you or to your website, and we'll be leaving that information later on in the podcast in terms of how they could contact you directly to going without glasses. Cause that's something that is a challenge for me as well as similar experience, different time frame.
Right.
Different time frame. Yeah. So that's very interesting. So I will leave, we'll get that information to contact you later.
Awesome.
However, the initial conversation we had that led to you coming on the podcast today was around my working with a Rolfer and a Feldenkrais practitioner 20 some years ago. And he had indicated to me that our senses are dual purpose, that we eat through our mouth, and we also speak. We hear through our ears. It also contributes to equilibrium. Right. We breathe through our nose, and we also smell, sense. And with our eyes, we see. And he left me hanging with that. And I was like, I don't know what the eyes work with. And he had spoke about the eyes can see as well as it controls the tension in the upper neck and back. That opened up our conversation as to how the eyes can affect tension in other parts of the body, headaches, neck tension, tension in the upper back and shoulders and chest and things like that. That's where I want to really dig in today and really from your experience of working with clients over the past 8 years, what has been your noticings? What has been the connections that you've made, your clients have made in terms of pain in other parts of the body as it relates to the eyes?
Yeah, I love that concept of the dual purpose of the senses. And that's actually something that I've said a lot with the eyes. I'll answer your question in just a second. That I sometimes will say that the eyes have two jobs. This kind of takes us in a little bit of a different direction, but it is connected too. It's like the main job is to see, like you said, is to receive the light into the body through the eye organs. And then the secondary purpose is to cry and actually like process emotions through tears. Now, the cool thing about the eyes is like, it's not just dual purpose. It's like multi-purpose just because of the whole, you know, connection with our sleep cycles and circadian rhythms and day and night and all that stuff. But like I said, we're going to keep it to the pain here. And what I want to do is like immediately give people a tangible experience of what you and I have suggested so far, which is that your eyes and the neck are connected. And if people listening want to kind of follow along, as long as you're not driving, is if you take your fingers to your ears and you just trace them straight back behind to the neck, finding like the occipital area, so where the skull kind of starts to curve underneath, and there's that kind of soft fleshy part beneath the skull bone there. If you press in pretty firmly with your fingers there, and you do like big eye movements, like circles, or you look left and right or up and down, can you actually feel?
I can feel it move. I can feel it moving. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
So okay. Cool.
The like the first time I did that, I was freaked out. You know, I was like, oh my gosh, like I had no idea that the movement of my eye muscles has a direct correlation to the movement of my neck muscles. And there's that, I mean, we can feel it. It's right there in the fingertips. And so to me, that was a huge discovery that, okay, if I have tension in my neck, that is going to inhibit some of the eye muscles in a sense. It might contribute to some eye strain or eye tension and vice versa. If I've got this chronic eye tension or excessive strain in the eye muscles, that's probably tightening up the neck and the shoulders and the back, upper back as well.
Got it.
And I love how you really honed it in to the upper body tension, like that dual purpose that you mentioned, that seeing and then also contributing to the, you know, tension levels up there. I want to bring in the role of the glasses here too, because if you wear the glasses, that has some sort of pattern or recognition in it to kind of potentially create some eye strain or tension, or I mean, a lot of the reasons why you get glasses is because you have eye strain already. And you might think the glasses are kind of helping with that, but really they're keeping the eye strain there and they're limiting the range of motion. You know, if you've got these frames,
right,
it's almost like these walls where you don't really look beyond the edge of the wall. And so you can think about how, you know, years of glasses usage kind of limits the mobility and the range of motion of the eyes. That can right there influence the neck and the mobility in the upper body too. So like the tricky part about the eyes though, is that, you know, we can go get a massage or we can go get some body work or see a chiropractor or get somebody to work on the neck and release some of that tension. It's not as straightforward to relax or release the eye muscles. Not very many people know how to do that. And that's kind of where the Bates method comes in. So for example, let's say you go in and get a massage, you're on the table for an hour, you know, your eyes are closed and you're not really seeing or using your vision in that way. It's more about relaxing, and maybe your massage therapist does a really great job of helping your neck and your shoulders and your back feel like really released and loose. But then they leave the room and you got to get up off the table, open your eyes back up. And if you have bad vision habits and there's this tightness or tension or eye strain, that the results from the massage are going to go away and that tension comes right back. Especially if you put glasses back on and it just kind of brings it back in a sense there too. So what we want to think about is how do we not only release the tension in the upper body, but if we can release the eye strain and the tension in the eye muscles, maybe the neck and the shoulders and the back can stay more relaxed longer instead of kind of tensing back up.
There's two things I want to bring up that are going to build on what we're talking about today. One is I appeared on your podcast the other day. So I want to include the link to the interview you did with me the other day. I want to include that's one piece. And I also want to include another link. I did a series for Relieve Neck Pain. It was a Relieve Neck Pain with me with the Camella Foundation. We'll include that link as well in the show notes of this, where people that are struggling with both eye strain as well as neck strain, they can get support on both sides of the equation moving forward from this podcast. So I wanted to make sure we got that into today's recording so they could look in the show notes as well for further support. But I will no longer interrupt you. Please continue. This is great stuff.
No, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, we just recorded that this week, so it's not even out yet, but yeah, that'll probably be out this month. And yeah, it's the Naked Eye podcast. And we had a great chat about about what you do and the overlaps between our work as well. So that's exciting that people have these resources to actually put this stuff into practice and action. And, you know, maybe another sort of good timing thing is the fact that I mentioned Dr. Bates earlier. He was the pioneer, the sort of the founder or the father of holistic eye care. He was around 100 years ago. He actually died in 1931. And from the years 1919 to 1930, he released a monthly publication called Better Eyesight. And it just, you know, pretty much explains this whole Bates method concept. And it's a really great resource to get straight to the source. Sometimes he would pick a theme per month, you know, as a monthly publication. And 100 years ago, February 1921, the Better Eyesight was all about pain. And not only about, you know, exploring the relationship between the eyes and the eye strain and the physical pain, but also the relationship between the mind and the memory and the imagination and pain, which to me is really fascinating. It's sort of the more subtle level of it.
And let me interrupt you again, just a moment. For those that are watching this on YouTube, we have the PDF will be available in the bonus section that Nathan is going to be offering for the Camella Foundation or Better Pain Education Podcast. We're going to have a copy of that February 21, Dr. William H. Bates PDF available in the bonus section, as well as the other training. It was a podcast that you had around pain.
It's actually us reading that PDF out loud in audio format with some discussions and commentary in between the articles. So there's five articles. So it's almost a 2 hour long podcast where it goes deep dive into this whole relationship of pain and vision. So our talk today can really, you know, open up the door, and then maybe that can get a little bit deeper into sort of the Bates approach to pain. Mm-hmm. And there's some cool like case histories and examples of people reducing like backaches and headaches and stuff using some of these vision practices.
Excellent.
Yeah. And the first article in that episode is about how your mind can increase or decrease your pain perception using your memory and imagination. And so maybe we can try this also if you're not driving. If you actually close your eyes,
yes,
and imagine the first letter of your name. So we're working with, not with our eyesight, we're working with the insight. It's the imagination. So it's not supposed to, like, you know, physically appear. It's just you're remembering a letter or picturing this letter. And according to Dr. Bates, he clarifies the difference between perfect memory and imperfect memory, or perfect imagination and imperfect imagination. So the first letter of my name is N. So if I have an imperfect memory or imagination of an N, for example, maybe it's gray instead of black, or the edges are fuzzy or blurry, or maybe there's some gap in the line, or there's an extra leg sticking out of it somewhere or something, like it's an imperfect version of the N. If I were to press my thumbnail into my finger pad of my index finger, I might feel a painful sensation. But if I imagine or remember a perfect N, perfectly black, sharp edges, nothing wrong with it, it's just the absolute best N. If I do that same thing and press the thumbnail into that same finger pad with the same amount of pressure, it may not seem as painful. It may not hurt quite as much, or may not hurt at all. It's pretty subtle, but what Bates is guiding us through is this idea that it's not just the physical eye muscles and the physical eye tension. That's a big part of it. There's also this huge mental component of it. And we might not really be aware of the quality of our memory or imagination, whether it's imperfect or perfect. I know I didn't before I read Bates's materials and I started to understand what that meant. So did you try that along with me, Bill, and with maybe the letter B?
I did. And I immediately thought I had an imperfect B. Mm-hmm. As I was struggling to figure out where my insight, you refer to it as insight, correct?
Yeah.
Where the insight would be. And as I closed my eyes, I was just seeing like the red from the lights that are shining on the video.
And that
it's like I was trying to focus on. Mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say that is your eyesight, right? That is your perception of the light coming through your closed eyelids, and so your brain is kind of basing your vision off of that that information. Whereas the insight has nothing to do with the lights or the colors that are coming into your eye organs. It has to do with what your mind is thinking of.
So I was struggling between figuring out what exactly I was looking to see or not see, or do you know what I'm saying? Like eyesight, insight, I recognize there's a difference, and I felt like almost my muscle or whatever that muscle is, that neurology that I was trying to engage in my insight wasn't engaging the way I would like it to. Mm-hmm. So I immediately defaulted to an imperfect B that was in my insight. So there you go.
Well, and that gets right to the heart of, or the core of the Bates method, which is that vision is 90% mental and 10% physical, meaning that sometimes if we do have some sort of vision issue or even physical pain, it could be rooted in some imperfect memory or imperfect imagination that we might not even be aware of. And this is one of the more difficult parts of this process, because the mental side of it is so less tangible. You know, the physical world out there, we can touch it and feel it and see it, but when we close the eyes and we do that inner vision work, I mean, that's like, you know, infinite possibilities there. So it can be a little confusing and overwhelming at first, but, you know, with some practice and experimentation, you can really work with that insight. And that's huge, I think.
Yes. And I also recognize in different times in my life when I spent time meditating that this would kind of cultivate that insight more so than the eyesight piece, the 90% you were talking about in my mind's eye. Is it, you refer to as your mind's eye? Is that what exact? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So our ability to envision a reality in our life that we currently aren't experiencing, this opens up a different realm and way different topics we could talk about. I'm going to keep it focused, disciplined and focused on the physical pain. So we're now relating, what I hear you saying is we're relating this experience that is 90% mental with the physical experience of tension in our body that can manifest in pain. And we felt it with those soft spots right below the skull in the back on either side of the spine, as when we're moving the tension, moving our eyes, and can feel that movement in our upper neck.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what brought me into this work, was my physical symptoms, my blurry vision, you know, some of my headaches and stuff. And so that you're right, that is the entry point. And that's obviously what we're kind of, you know, one of our goals, right, is to address that side of it. And I just had no idea how big the mental side of it played in this process. And I guess the reason I brought that up is just because when people first hear about either the Bates method or about natural vision improvement, sometimes they go straight to the eye exercises of like, okay, I've got this eye strain or this, you know, pain in my eyes. Maybe if I do some exercises, it'll fix it or help it. And there is something to that, but taking into that 90% mental account and the fact that your vision is really happening in your brain, you know, that's why I just feel obliged to bring that up, just to make sure people are kind of on the right track if they are interested in pursuing some of this stuff. Because there are some common mistakes that people make. So
I could immediately see, no pun intended, immediately recognize that the default would be, and this is what happens with people in pain. They want to do more. They want to put more effort into something. In doing so, as opposed to being, allowing their body to be present with what is going on with it, to recognize and be guided and directed through that process, they would default to the exercises. Well, just give me the exercises I need to do to shift that. What I hear you saying in relationship to the Bates method is this is only affecting 10% of what we would want to shift in the eyesight, which is affecting the tension in the rest of the body.
Yeah. Yeah. That's spot on. It's because we don't want to just ignore the physical stuff. We don't want to leave that out. It's important. It's a big part of it.
Sure.
But if we can kind of take a more mental approach, that's, I think, a smart way to get some good results from it. But you're right. I love that kind of saying of like, we're human beings, not human doings.
Right.
So sometimes it's less about what to add. Because sometimes if you do an eye exercise, it might just add more strain to an already strained system. Mm-hmm. But instead, the Bates method's all about relaxation. So how do we relax the eyes? Turns out the main way we do that is by relaxing the mind.
Mm.
Because you can do, you know, for example, palming, which is a pretty popular Bates method relaxation practice where you rub your hands to generate some heat. Cup your hands, place your palms over your closed eyes, block out all the light. It's really soothing in the dark and the warmth. But that's not enough, right? If you're stressing out about that to-do list or this deadline that's coming up or this issue in your life, your eyes are not going to relax. They're going to stay constricted and tight because these involuntary eye muscles are influenced by your mental state. So a big part of what I do to help people is to find that more relaxed mental state, which initiates a release of these chronically tight eye muscles. And that's the tricky part. You know, how do we achieve that or kind of, and I'm glad you brought up the meditation because that's one example of how we can work with more of the mind and kind of finding some more peace and calm there. But everybody's so different. You know, meditation isn't going to work for everybody. And there's certain strategies we can explore to really see what works for the individual.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you know, like when I work with kids, I ask them like, what's your favorite show or movie or book or comic book? Like, who are some of your favorite characters? You know, I'll have them palm their eyes and kind of tell me a little story from their favorite scene or something, you know, so that's giving their mind something that they like and they enjoy to think about and talk about and imagine and remember and visualize. And in that moment, their eye muscles are probably more relaxed than if, you know, they were thinking about something less pleasant or something more stress inducing. So it really, keeps coming back to that mind thing. Right. And it's,
I have countless stories of working with my daughter. She's seven. And ever since she was little and she'd fall, there was always like, we may have spoken about this on the podcast the other day, allowing her to have her experience, which is like the poker face when she falls to see if she's actually hurt or she's just scared. And if she's scared, then when I say, did you see the bird in the tree? And she immediately looks to the bird in the tree and she forgets about crying. And I did that when she was younger. Now it's immediately asking her if she's breathing. But it really ties into that. And I think what you're alluding to, or what you're talking about, as far as each person is different. We're trying to find our beginning of the circle, so to speak. It's a term that I use quite often in terms of what's going to work for this person. Some clients, we need more magnesium. Other clients, we need to use rescue remedy. Other clients, we need to use a breathing technique. And this is not to avoid dealing with the tension that their body's expressing, but how can we figure out what works for them? What is that piece that is going to shift their neurological state in their mind, in their brain, that is now going to allow their physical body to begin to relax and feel less stressed?
That's awesome. I love that. Of how do we unlock it for that person? You know, because it's not just this like cookie cutter thing that, you know, works for everybody equally. And I think that's the nature of any kind of more holistic approach, is to really customize it from start to finish. And, you know, maybe, you know, since some of this mental stuff can get a little bit more intangible, might be kind of cool to reground with a more sort of physical thing that people might have even more relation to, which is one of the worst vision habits that can really lead to more pain and problems, which is staring. And I used to be a world-class starer. I used to stare at my screen to play lots of video games, but even like when I was having conversations with people, I would pick one eye and just lock in on it and not move. Because for some reason I thought that indicated, you know, I was really present and listening and paying attention. But I was actually harming my eyes and my vision by doing that. And so is that something that you've, been aware of either in yourself or in others, of this connection with maybe some aspect of staring with the eyes?
Yes, this would come from my martial arts training and background. We recognize it as two neurological states, either a sympathetic fight or flight state and a parasympathetic arrested and relaxed state. So if somebody's either being verbally aggressive or physically aggressive, coming at you in different scenarios with the knife, a gun, a stick, whatever that is, there is a tendency for the body to go into that sympathetic state, the fight or flight state, deer in the headlights. Yeah. And now we have tunnel vision. We're just focused in on the person and the fear of what we don't want. And one of the pieces in the martial arts training, at least in the Russian martial art, the Sistema training, was to begin to learn how to engage the parasympathetic neurological state in those instances, which is immediately going to wide angle vision, which is a rested and relaxed way of looking at the world. And then we can begin to see opportunities of how to move or how to respond, as opposed to reacting to the situation, which locks us into the experience we immediately want to get out of.
I love that connection there. Yeah, that fight, flight, freeze, and the stare is the freeze. You know, it's just like everything stops moving, and it's ironic how that, you know, it makes us less effective in that moment, but it's kind of our go-to a lot of times. And so, you know, I think that even if somebody just makes an intention to say, you know what, I'm going to break the stare. I'm going to replace this staring habit with some more movement, some more blinking, or maybe just closing it. Like if you catch yourself in a stare, cause there's different kinds of stares. I talk about active staring and passive staring. So active staring, might be if you're have to working on the computer for 8 hours a day and or more, and sure your eyes are scanning the screen, but if you're not looking away from the screen out the window or at something closer, your eyes are staring at that one focal distance for too long. But the passive stare is more of that just kind of like zoning out, like daydreaming, so you just lock in on something and your mind wanders off. So if you can catch yourself in that moment and then do something about it, blink or shift or look out the window or close and take a break, you know, there's nothing wrong with daydreaming, just do it with your eyes closed. Like that begins the process of people changing their vision habits that could maybe next time they are in a more stressful situation, they don't automatically default back to that stare. They can think, oh, maybe I can keep blinking or shifting or having that motion or movement kind of carry through.
And what I really hear you saying is recognize when the nervous system gets tired of being in one state, instead of forcing it to be in a, in this case, a stare, forcing the nervous system to be in a seated position for hours on end or standing for hours on end without moving. I think that creates an unnatural neurological state in the body, which creates tension. Because now whatever we're locking our body into, we're also locking our eyes into. And then all of a sudden, my lower back hurts, or my feet really ache, or my neck is sore, or I have frozen shoulder, or whatever the situation or scenario that's presenting itself, it's tied into a holistic approach of how the body's neurological state has locked into this experience that we're not allowing it to disconnect from.
Yeah. That it's about the change, you know, adjustment, right? Yep. And whether it's moving the body, moving the eyes, and specifically with your retinas, like in the back of your eye, that's actually receiving the light. Mm-hmm. They absolutely depend on change of stimulation. Mm. Right. So if you stare at something, and you can try it right now, and it doesn't feel good. If you stare at one thing, and you don't blink and you don't shift, so you don't move your eyes, like maybe the O on the top of the eye chart, or some point in your room where you just pick it and you just stare at it as long as you possibly can, it shouldn't feel good. And after 10, 20, 30 seconds, you crave a blink or you want to look somewhere else. It does not feel good, but we have adopted it as sort of a habit. And some people, even myself included, eventually find comfort in the stare. So it actually feels kind of like a relief to do it, which is kind of backwards, because if you just demonstrated that, it should have felt kind of uncomfortable. And if it didn't feel uncomfortable, that just means you've gotten really good at staring.
Just for those that are not watching the video, Nathan pointed to an eye chart that he has in the back corner of his office. And I can get down to the third line so far. It says, you can relearn to see clearly. I got to the fourth line.
Nice. Got an improvement right there.
So the O that he was pointing to was on his eye chart in his office.
Yeah. And so when you're, whether it's the O on the eye chart or some object in your room, if you're just staring at it, your rods and your cones in your retina, they're getting fatigued because they're getting the same stimulus for too long. And since they require change, you might actually even lose parts of your visual field. I used to do this when I was bored in class as a kid. I would stare at one part of the board. Until my peripheral vision would begin to fade and become black, like my vision would disappear. And then right when I would blink or shift, it would reappear.
Huh.
Wow. And you wonder why I developed myopia.
Wow. I hadn't thought about that. I had an experience with my daughter yesterday. We were outside. It was sunny. There was a lot of snow out there, so it came inside, and there was a degree of, I guess it wouldn't be, it was like night blindness, that experience where it was difficult to see inside the house until my eyes adjusted to that. And I'm, your take as to what that is similar to what you were just speaking about? I'm not quite sure what that is.
That actually sounds more like rhodopsin, which is this visual pigment in your retina, which helps you with night vision. So when, like, for example, a movie theater is a good example. So like if you're going to a matinee and it's, you know, bright sunlight, you go into this dark movie theater, you can't really see much when you first get in there. But after 5, 10, 15 minutes, once you've got your seat, like you can start to see the walls and the chairs and the backs of people's heads and stuff. Mm. So what happens is when you're in the dark, your retina produces rhodopsin, or it's called visual purple. Mm. It's this visual pigment, and it helps you see in the dark. Mm. And then right when the movie's over, you're all adjusted to your night vision, you walk back out in the sunlight, it's like, whoa, it's super yeah. bright. It takes a minute, but light actually destroys the rhodopsin, and then you've adjusted back to the day vision. So if you're when you were out in that bright sunlight, you didn't have any, all the rhodopsin was gone. Mm. You know, the light had diminished it. And then when you went back indoors and it was much darker, you were still in that day vision mode, and your retinas mm. didn't actually have enough rhodopsin. And mm. as it was kind of reproducing it, you started to get it back once it was there again.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. Well, I didn't want to go off topic too much, but it was interesting what you were saying regarding the ability to focus on something too much and begin to decrease your vision because of the focus being on only one thing.
Yeah. You know, and if that one thing you're focusing on for too long is a screen, that raises another issue of the whole blue light component of, you know, the potential negative effects of overexposure to artificial blue light, this high frequency light coming from the screen. So like I started using blue light blocking softwares in 2012, so that my computer screen right now looks a lot more kind of yellow, amber, orange color. And my eyes hurt less because I don't receive as much blue light. And I also have these blue blocking glasses that I'll wear sometimes. And these are simple little tools that people can implement. And you might find that your computer time becomes so much more comfortable and you can go for longer and it's not causing this computer vision syndrome issue and all these side effects. So that might be a good thing to maybe add in the show notes, like the links to Flux or Iris, these blue blocking softwares you can download on your computer. Or most of, you know, smartphones and mobile devices have some sort of night shift built in already to the display settings. You can check that out.
Nathan, do you have these on your website? Are these specific links on your website?
Yeah, I have one. Yeah, I actually interviewed the creator of Iris, that software. And so there's a page on my site where it's got that interview and then, you know, link to their site. I don't think I have Flux link. I might have Flux linked on my site, but I'll definitely send you the info.
Well, yeah, instead of me recreating the wheel,
yeah,
like we could just send them to your website recognize where they can, the research has already been done.
Yeah. And there's also a couple of examples of those blue blocking glasses on there too. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. Can you give an example or two of clients that you've worked with the either intended or unintended side effects of releasing tension in other parts of their body or pain, discomfort in other parts of their body as a result of working with the eyes?
Yeah, for sure. Maybe just building off of that blue light thing. I had one student who was really sensitive to certain wavelengths of light from the screen. And it was like, she couldn't even be on the computer. It just would immediately create that headache, that migraine would just kick in from that. And so that was a big one for her, was like finding ways to maybe get more comfortable with the light or be able to work on the computer for more. And so we're still working together on it, and she's made a lot of progress, but she has been able to work on the computer for much longer compared to before because of some of these, you know, blue light measures we're taking. Mm-hmm. She also has like this filter, like actual physical filter that she puts on her monitor. Mm-hmm. So they make those as well. Alongside that issue, we're also working on just, you know, her farsightedness and clarity in general. But another one that comes up is a client who was involved in a car accident and was having issues with his feet, one of his feet and legs, and you know, just a lot of residual pain and PTSD from the accident. And And he also was having some trouble with the screens as well and the blue light aspect. And so he's combining this vision training stuff with other forms of physical therapy and ways to work with the pain. But even some of that, like, you know, phantom limb sort of stuff, even though he's still got it, but it's, you know, he's working on rehabilitating. Some of these vision techniques, he's really reported that they've had some significant influence on either the physical sensation of the pain or the perception of the pain. And he's, you know, a little more mobile now. And I mean, it's not just the vision stuff. It's all the other stuff he's doing too. But that to me was a big interesting case, because it's like the feet are kind of the farthest body part from the eyes. Yeah. And even they're connected, and we can work with that relationship there. Worked with it, not so much with it's more kind of about vertigo and like you brought up with the ears and the vestibular mm-hmm. system. Right. I work with some people who are having trouble with either vertigo or balance issues, and people finding a lot more stability and balance through working with the eyes and the vision. I'd say the most common one, though, is headaches and migraines.
Mm.
Like, that's one of the first things to go for people when they start taking better care of their eyes, is they get less headaches and migraines. Mm. And that's huge to me, because I used to get headaches all the time in high school. I'd take ibuprofen, Tylenol, all kinds of stuff. And when I first started taking my glasses off and started going without them for longer,
mm-hmm.
I would get headaches because I didn't have my glasses on. It was blurry, and I would get relief when I put them back on and it was clear again.
Mm-hmm.
But within a certain amount of time, that actually flipped. As I was adjusting and adapting, I would actually get headaches the longer I left the glasses on, and I would get relief when I removed them. Even though my vision wasn't clear yet, it was still blurry with the glasses off. But that change mm-hmm. to me was a big shift where, oh, maybe it's actually something about these glasses and this eye strain, you know, this chronic tension right in the skull there, you know, around mm-hmm. the eyes. Sure. Maybe that's contributing to this pain in my head and in my headaches and stuff. Mm-hmm. And by relieving all that eye strain, it had a significant effect on those headaches.
Mm-hmm. Those are awesome examples. One thing I immediately went to with the client you were working with that was in the car accident mm-hmm. is they see they're going to hit something and everything yeah. in their body locks up, which includes pushing on the brake in anticipation of the impact. So they physically see this situation that is out of their control, and they're doing everything in their power to stop that, which is in their feet. So it's, I see it directly connected, the feet and the eyes. So whether, even if it is the furthest part of the body away from the eyes, that it can still have a tremendous effect on the physical body or in the feet. And of course, that tension pattern is going to affect how that person moves, how they get out of the vehicle after the accident, how they sit, how they stand, how they sleep. That's just going to have a ripple effect that gets embedded in that neurological state that we were talking about at the beginning of the call today.
Well, and at the very beginning of the call, you were saying how, you know, so much of this life information passes through the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And that your explanation of that was just a really good, you know, nail in that of, like, you know, visually experience anticipating this event, and that sends a cascade of signals through the brain and the body to tense or to have that response.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. You know, just think, not just an extreme case like that, but in any everyday kind of thing. I mean, everything we're doing for the most part is coming in, filtering through our senses and our sensory system. And then it's not just physical. Remember, it's that mental perception of the input too. So it's so intricate.
mm-hmm. Yeah. Nathan, we're going to wrap it up here shortly. Is there anything else that is kind of out there, that loose end that I may not have tied up today? Anything you want to share, add?
Yeah. So if people do listen to the full Better Eyesight podcast from February 1921, or they read some of those articles, I just wanted to highlight this one thing from that whole article, that whole edition, which is called central fixation. This is a
central fixation.
Yeah, okay. It's a term from, it's a medical term, but Dr. Bates used it as essentially the fundamental principle of the entire Bates method. Mm-hmm. And this is, I think, out of all of the Bates method, at least when you look at Bates's materials and research, is the most times when pain comes up is when he's talking about central fixation. And the way he helped people decrease or eliminate pain was by helping them achieve central fixation. And a lot of people with vision problems have lost central fixation. Mm. It's a little bit probably too much to fully explain right now, but you know, listening to it in the bonus episode or in reading through the PDF, you'll see it come up, and just know that it's it. Remember when you were talking about the tunnel vision versus that, you know, in the sympathetic versus the more kind of expansive view in the parasympathetic?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Central fixation has a lot to do with that. These visual fields, your central vision versus your peripheral vision. Mm-hmm. So, you know, your central vision is just whatever you're looking directly at. Peripheral vision is anything else you're not looking directly at.
Right.
And when we're in that fear state or that sympathetic state or that, you know, tension state, we might get that tunnel vision where the periphery collapses. Mm-hmm. And we're in that tunnel vision, which isn't great. You described how we can open up and have our visual field expand, and we can have that softer gaze and that peripheral expansion, which is really relaxing. Central fixation is almost how we kind of find a middle ground between those two states. Mm-hmm. So that you can have a wide open peripheral field, and within it, you have this little tiny area that actually registers sharper details and more vivid colors than the periphery does. Mm-hmm. When you put glasses on, it makes you think that the periphery and the central are kind of equally clear. It's just all sort of crisp-ish. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes you lose your central fixation. You lose the differentiation between that little tiny central focal point and the periphery around it. If I call it diffusion, it's when you diffuse out and you're trying to like just see too much or take too much in, that can lead to pain and blur. If you can shrink your central vision down to a small area, like maybe one eye on a face instead of a whole face, or one letter on an eye chart instead of a whole eye chart, or the doorknob on a house instead of the whole house. Mm-hmm. If you can do that and allow the periphery, the rest of the house or the rest of the face or the rest of the chart to be noticeably less distinct, like just letting it be a little softer, that can increase your, not only your clarity, so your physical eyesight, but it can decrease the pain and make you like feel really good, because you're mm-hmm. actually using your eyes the way they are anatomically arranged. Mm-hmm. So if we go against the anatomy, it hurts. It's uncomfortable. But if we get in line with the anatomy, it feels good and we see better. Mm-hmm. But like I said, this concept, this central fixation thing it's a little tricky and a little complex. And I know for me, Bates has a whole chapter in his book about it called mm-hmm. central fixation. And I read that chapter and it just went right over my head and I had no idea what he was talking about. Mm-hmm. And so I did just want to kind of, like you said, just kind of like touch on it or just plant a little seed to maybe start either letting people know that it exists, mm-hmm. That they have these different visual fields that they can start to kind of map out, mm-hmm. and realize that we want to achieve a balance between this wide periphery, which doesn't have the capability to see details. And within it, we've got this little area of detailed vision. And that's a practice to kind of learn how to get that back.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a whole lot behind that little bit of central fixation, that word, yeah. Those two words, central fixation. So we'll also include the link to Dr. Bates's book in the show notes. We'll do that as well. The link to the PDF in the bonus section of the Better Eyesight from February, the PDF for the Better Eyesight Dr. Bates wrote in February of 1921, as well as the deep dive you went in your podcast on that. So those who are interested can pursue that information.
Yeah, that sounds like a plan.
Nathan, thank you so much for being here. It's been a pleasure having you on the Pain Education Podcast.
It's been an honor. It's been really cool to reconnect with you. And I'm excited to think about, you know, more collaborations in the future with you and just continuing to help each other out and help other people out and educate people about these really inspiring and hopeful things. Really, great. Really glad to see what you're doing and getting it out there.
Cool. Well, okay. Well, thank you so much for being here. Thanks for all those that are tuning into the Pain Education Podcast. We appreciate it very much. For more information, check out the CamellaFoundation.org and all of that information. Once again, will be in the show notes. So we will see you on the next one. To learn more about the work we do at the Camella Foundation, please visit our website at the Camella, C-O-M-E-L-L-A, foundation.org. Join us next week for another conversation on natural healing methods to eliminate pain.